Hello, my name is Erin York. We are conducting this interview as a part of a class project at the University of South Carolina. The date is October 26th, 2017. And I'm here with my interviewee today. And if you could, will you please tell us your full name?
Jessie Mae McKinstry.
And Jessie, where were you born?
I was born right here in Fairfield County.
Okay, all right. And can you tell me a little bit about growing up?
Well, growing up was interesting in my household because there were 10 of us, 5 girls and 5 boys, and we lived with our parents. And we had lots of fun playing together. It was a rural kind of setting. We had gardens, we had dogs, we had a calf, and we had pigs.
Oh my goodness.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes, we lived in the outskirts of Winnsboro.
Okay.
So we were in the country, like.
And can you talk a little bit about your parents, your grandparents?
Yeah, my parents were Frank McKinstry and my mother, Rebecca Bird McKinstry. And they got married at a pretty young age. I think my mom must have been about 18 and my father might have been maybe 21 when they got married. And like I said, my father worked for Phillips Granite Company. It was a business out in the Ryan area of Fairfield County. And they used to do dynamiting to get the stones out of the earth. And they would make monuments and tombstones. And those tombstones were used on graves.
Oh, wow.
And my dad was a polisher. And he had to polish the stones with his hands and had rags and stuff. They didn't have a polishing machine like they do in the businesses now, but everything basically was done by hand for polishing those stones. And he would help to set the monuments in the cemeteries throughout Fairfield County.
Oh my goodness.
And my mother was a housewife and just a mother, and she worked some babysitting and with some of the white families in Winnsboro. And one in particular was the Wiley family, Lindsay and Bob Wiley. But most of the time she was at home with us, but a lot of times she would do babysitting at night. And sometimes when we got older, we would go with her at the homes and babysit.
Did you like that?
Yes, I liked that because they had books and everything that I could read, and they had a TV, and so that was fun for me because that was another outlet, because at the time we did not have a television.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And can you tell me a little bit about your grandparents, great-grandparents?
Well, my father's parents, I knew Henrietta Pearson McKinstry, and his father was Frank McKinstry. And I knew about them. They lived in what we call the Middlesex section of Fairfield County. And that section is grown up today. A lot of families live in that area still. So that's where my dad was reared. I did not know my mother's parents because they were deceased by the time that I was born. But their names were Andrew Bird and Caroline Ellison Bird.
And where were you within the 10 children?
I was number 6 from the top.
Okay, from the top.
Yes,
all right.
So I have 2 sisters and 2 brothers younger than I am.
Okay, nice. And where did you first go to school?
I went to school all of my years at Fairfield. There were 3 buildings at the time when I was going to school. We had the elementary area and what would be called maybe the middle school now at the second building. And then this building is the high school part of the school. So I went all of my years at the same school.
Wow, that's impressive. Not a lot of people are going to the same school, you know, for all of their years. And can you tell us some memories of your schooling years?
Well, I remember vividly in starting in first grade, because we didn't have kindergarten. We had first grade. And I had a teacher, Miss Robertson, And then in my second grade teacher was Miss Mary Catherine Widener. And I remember when we were in school, we had the little books, Dick and Jane, Spot, Puff, Tim, and all those little characters. And we would, my sisters and brothers had those books before me. And the parents had to buy those little books. And they were just softback readers. And when they finished with theirs, they saved them for the next child. And if they had torn them or lost some pages in it, they would have to buy new books at that year. But I always tried to read their books and do their math that they had. So it was fun. And I just thought that being a teacher was just the greatest thing that I'd ever heard of.
So I'm going to kind of skip around here. Did you become a teacher?
I did. Uh-huh. My parents said that by the age of three, if anybody asked me what I wanted to be, I said a teacher. And so God allowed me to achieve that success in life. And I worked in the school system for 34 years.
Wow. In the Fairfield?
No, I worked four years in Chesterfield County in Pageland, South Carolina. And then I worked 30 years in Fairfield County.
Wow.
And I taught at every grade level.
Wow.
Except for, every grade level. And the last 3 years before I retired, I worked as an assistant administrator at the Fairfield County Career Center.
Wow. And so what all did you do when you were teaching? What subjects?
Well, I taught language arts and social studies.
Cool. Mm-hmm. You probably would have been one of my favorite teachers then.
Yes. But in a way, I enjoyed teaching. I enjoyed my students. And when I first started working in Pageland, I was working, and they had a union school also, first grade through 12th grade. But then I taught at the middle school level and the high school because I was working in grades 7 through 12.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And did you have a favorite grade that you enjoyed teaching? Or
I tell you what, I enjoyed teaching the older children because, by the time that they reached me, they were kind of focused on what they wanted to be and the importance. And you didn't have to do all the little management things for the younger children, and their attention span was longer, and you could get more accomplished, I think.
Yes, that makes
sense.
So
that was my favorite area for middle school and high school.
And then when you transitioned to being an administrator, what was that like?
It was enjoyable because I got to see a lot of students, but I had the role as a kind of disciplinarian and then just a kind of advisor. Mm-hmm. And that was it. It was different, but it was pretty neat.
Yeah. So were you advising high school students?
Yes, they were just high school. You know, and they were just basically talking with them about the importance of education and their behavior in the classroom. Mm-hmm. Because most of the children that I dealt with on a regular basis were some of the students that was giving little problems in the classrooms. And I would have to talk with them about them. And sometimes they would have to require their parents to come to school with them for a conference and all that. Mm-hmm. But it was still a lot of fun because I got to speak to them basically every day because they rode from the high school on the bus to the career center because it was about maybe 2 or 3 miles from the high school itself.
Okay.
But now they have it at Fairfield Central where they have the career center right there on site, which makes it easier for them as far as the transportation is concerned because they don't have to worry about that bus ride.
Right.
And it just is more convenient to have the both of the schools together.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Definitely.
Yeah.
And in the Career Center, did they also talk about college with the students?
Yeah, but they had guidance counselors at the regular school that would talk to them because see, they would just be at the Career Center for maybe a couple of hours a day. If they just took one class, it would be like 2-hour blocks. And then they had guidance counselors at school that would talk about their careers. But then there were some students who took two vocational classes and they would come in the morning and then maybe in the afternoon, and they might take up carpentry in the morning, and then they might take up welding in the afternoon. So they had an opportunity to get two career choices in, and that would be for 2 years.
That's really neat.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, and then I had one student that I remembered who got a job as soon as he graduated from high school with a welding company.
Wow.
And I was talking with his brother just recently, and he said he's still doing that welding.
And so, how many years ago was that?
Well, that was in about 1994, something like that. So he's still in that job.
That's awesome.
But he started off making about $14 an hour as a senior from high school because of the fact that he had done the welding classes, and he had passed successfully doing it.
Nice.
Yeah.
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 Good for him.
So now I'm sure he's making more than that an hour now.
Well, and that his brother remembered you and wanted you to know.
Yes. Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah.
That means you made a big impact on your students. Yeah. So we'll kind of jump back to going to school. When you were going to school, how were the facilities at your school?
Well, they were not the best, but the teachers made do with what they had. And unlike today when they have all the technology and everything, I think we had like you showed the films on.
Oh.
One of these old timey.
Like a projector?
A projector.
Yeah.
And I remember maybe twice a year, we would go into the auditorium, and then we would see a movie and something like that. And that was just maybe twice a year that was used, in the school. And the teachers had little copier machines that I think by hands, they had to turn and get the copies and all that stuff.
Wow.
And make the copies whenever they could do that. And that wasn't very often, so we ended up writing notes from the board a lot, the chalkboards. Mm-hmm. And so I think that was one of the ways that we developed our writing skills and spelling and all that, because we had to write essays and we had to write our questions down from the board and then go home and read and then answer the questions and things like that. So that gave us a lot of writing experience. And I remember going to school from the first grade through the seventh grade. We had actual writing books where we had manuscript writing. And then we transitioned in the third grade to doing some cursive. And we had to have writing classes just like a regular English or social studies class during that year. We had writing activities that we did. And that's a lot of times people talk about my penmanship, because I had that practice.
Yeah.
And I would practice when I would go home. Mm-hmm. And I remember once my mother was looking for a sheet of paper to write her grocery list on. And every page I turned in my book, I had written on all of my notebook paper. And she said, "Well, why do you use so much?" I said, "Well, when I make a mistake, I just start over." Mm-hmm. Because I wanted my paper to be perfect. But I remember that didn't sit well with her, but, I wasn't punished for it. But then I was just warned, that's why you have an eraser on the pencil. You can erase a mistake when you write it in pencil.
Oh,
but anyway, that was one of the fun things that I remember.
And what was your favorite subject?
I don't know, because I just loved going to school, and I just loved everything. But I enjoyed reading a lot, because we got to read the different stories in our little books and talk about them. And I enjoyed math. So it was just that I just loved school. So I tried to excel in everything that I did.
Wow. That's awesome.
Yeah.
And can you remember any teachers who had a big impact on you?
Oh, yeah. Miss Whitener did, my second grade teacher. And she used to come in the room and she would, her manuscript and her Her cursive writing was so nice and neat, and I just wanted to copy that, and I wanted that, you know, my writing to look like that, and I just would practice writing in a lot. And she taught us reading and different things because she was teaching everything in the elementary level, and we did the little art projects and things like that. Had to, you know, do the bulletin boards.
Yep.
So we did a lot of activities with her, but she impacted my life a lot. And in fact, she died a few years ago, but she was one of my favorite teachers. And then I had another teacher in seventh grade, Miss Maud Ross taught me English, and Miss Willa Dean Bonner taught me social studies. So they were some of the favorite teachers that I had.
And how did those two impact you?
Well, they were just, you know, just that they were just encouraging people, and they would just want you to do your best, and they just tried to pull the best out of you. And so they made sure that if you wrote something and it wasn't right, you know, you had to redo that. And they just kept on you, just constantly kept on you to do your best, because they said, I know you can do better, or, you know, and I just encourage you to do better. And that was one of, and one of my favorite math teachers was Mr. Witherspoon, and he was really nice, but he was a big, tall man, and he was, I guess he was about maybe 6'5" or something like that, and I know he weighed just about maybe 300 pounds, and he told us one day as he introduced himself when he first started working, and he said, I'm going to be your math teacher this year. And he said, and I want my students to do well. And he said, I'm going to try to appeal to your pride. But he said, if I can't appeal to your pride, I'll appeal to your hide.
Oh.
And from and from that point on, I was kind of scared of him, not just physically scared that he would really do something bad to me, but just the fact that I wanted to please him so much until I just tried my best in math. And so I did well in his math class.
That's so clever.
Yes.
I like that.
Yeah, but I had some a lot of nice teachers that I remember, but those that I call their names are some of the ones that I remember, you know, more so than others. And then I had have one teacher who's still alive now, and she was Miss Margaret Roseborough, and she taught me English. I think she taught me English when I was in the eighth grade. And Miss Bernice Jackson Brown, taught me civics when I was in the ninth grade. Mm-hmm. So those are some of the teachers that I remember, and she's still alive too.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's really neat.
Yeah, and then when I got into high school and was taking typing, Miss Ruth Brown taught me typing, mm-hmm. and we just had the manual typewriters, and so that was what we were using at the time, and I think maybe I got up to type in maybe 50 words or maybe 55 words a minute.
Hey, that's, you know, really good, you on know, a typewriter,
but,
yeah.
But, I think I took typing 2 years and shorthand and stuff like that in the high school.
Yeah, what all courses were offered for you to be able to take?
Well, we had algebra, the math courses, and we had the civics in ninth grade. Then we had American history, mm-hmm. and we had the typing and shorthand, all that, and bookkeeping, all that went with the business part of it, and had the science classes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So there were different tracks that you could go into? There was the business?
No, actually, those were just, you know, part of the curriculum.
Okay.
And for the most part, the girls would go into that with the typing and shorthand and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But we had a few boys in those classes, yeah.
Yeah, good skills mm-hmm. for anybody
yeah.
to have.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And about how large were your class sizes?
Probably, I'd say anywhere from 25, maybe to 30 people in a class. We had big classes.
Mm-hmm.
And unlike now, the teachers didn't have any kind of assistant. They just had to manage the class, you know, room. And even with the smaller children in elementary classes, we had, you know, a lot of children in the classroom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And was your school segregated or integrated?
No, it was segregated.
Segregated, mm-hmm. yeah.
Yes.
And can you talk about how that impacted you?
Well, To me, it wasn't a problem as far as the school itself. But then I remember as I got older, I saw some of the differences because we would be walking to school and then the white children would be riding the school bus. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering why we couldn't have a school bus to ride. And we had to walk about, maybe it was a little over a mile from where I live to school each day and back home. And we could not use the public library. They had a public library here, and the blacks were not allowed to use the public library. So whatever we had was just from the library in the schools, or if your parents happened to have some extra money to buy books and a set of encyclopedia or something like that, we had that as a resource. But other than that, we couldn't go to the public library and check out books and use that during that time. And I do remember when we had our school books, because the school books were issued by the State Department of Education in Columbia, and we would get the old books that the students at Mount Zion had used for 3 to 4 years, and that's what we got. And then they got the new books, and they you could see the name of the school stamped in the book that we got, but they were turned over to us. We never got the new books at that time. So what we were using was just, you know, information that probably was deleted by the time, obsolete by the time that that we got to the point where,
wow.
And you could see the names of students written in the book that had used the book, and they had the name written in, and then the date that they used them. And then it passed down to another child at that school. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the cycle, we got the old books from Mount Zion, and then they got the new books.
Wow.
So I do remember that.
And then when you were growing up, you mentioned the library was segregated.
Yes, that's right.
And was the rest of the community segregated
as
well?
Yeah, well, when you had, if you had a store like downtown on the main street, Congress Street, there was a Belk store.
Yeah.
And I remember they had upstairs, there's and downstairs, but if they had a water fountain, and then they had one marked colored and one marked white, so we had to drink from the one that was marked colored.
Wow.
So I remember that, and even some of the little restaurants that sold, you know, we couldn't go inside the restaurant, but they had a little window. And we could go up and order a sandwich or a hot dog or whatever. It was just like that. And I say, I remember that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But as a child coming up, you know, like my dad worked with the white family. And a lot of times, you know, I started working away from home mm-hmm. at the age of 12.
Wow.
And I used to babysit for a lady in the community. And that my dad worked for her husband. And I would babysit her grandchildren. And then a lot of times I would do little chores around the house, sweeping and folding towers and things like that, doing little things. And she wanted me to, you know, make some money.
Yeah.
And so she gave me a little job.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
And did you enjoy that?
I enjoyed that because, yeah. You know, it's nice to have your own money to spend. Yeah. And even with the little bit that I was making, I shared with my mom.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's lovely.
Mm-hmm. And I do remember because she was a really fine lady, and they came from a good family. And her name, if I may call it, was Miss Lucille Phillips. And her husband, Mr. H.G. Phillips Sr., was the one of the people who operated that Ryan Quarry. And he was also at one time the president of the Bank of Fairfield.
Wow.
And I remember when I was in high school, probably in the 11th grade, Ms. Phillips told me one day, she said, "Jesse," she said, "I want to do something for you." And she said, "For every dollar you save, I'll save one for you." And she did that. She started my first savings account at the Bank of Fairfield. So when I started college, I had a little savings.
Wow.
And she did that for me. And her children never knew, because before one of her sons died, well, her only son passed about maybe 3 years ago, I told him what his mother had done for me. And he said, you know what? I never realized that. I never knew that. But then I grew up around the children I still, have contact with some of her grandchildren today. And then they have grandchildren now. So then some of her great-grandchildren I have gotten to meet.
Oh, my goodness. Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah. So,
And she was a special person in my life, too.
Yeah.
And in fact, she passed away the year before my mom did. She passed away in October of 1983. And my mom passed away in October of 1984. So those were two big losses in my life.
Mm-hmm. In a very short amount of time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Did you keep a relationship with her after you went to college?
Oh, yeah, because she would always, when I'd come back from my spring break and all that, she would always have little jobs for me to do around the house. So we kept that going.
Yeah.
Until she got ill, and up until maybe a year before she passed away, because she was in the hospital. And she passed away, but I attended the service, the funeral service, because her children always kept in touch with me.
Wow. Mm-hmm. So when integration started happening in Fairfield County, were you in college or were you here?
No, I was, when integration started in Fairfield County, I was working as a teacher, because I started working in Pageland, South Carolina. And when I worked in Pageland, the last year that I worked in Pageland, I was one of the one of four faculty members from Petersburg High School, the all-black school in Pageland, that was sent to Petersburg High School, which was formerly an all-white school, to work. I was hand-chosen with three other co-workers to serve on that faculty, but the student body was integrated that year. The entire student body for the high school was integrated.
Wow. Mm-hmm. So from the perspective of a teacher, was that successful? Was it not?
It was very successful, and it was mainly due to the principal that we had at the school. Mm-hmm. The superintendent wasn't that great. He wasn't that fond of the integration. But the principal that we had wanted to be fair, and he was Mr. Weinberg, and he was the first white principal that I had had. Oh. In fact, I had worked 3 years in the all segregated school in Pageland for the black school, Petersburg High School, and Mr. Weinberg wanted to be fair. So the students had elected their officers for that year. And so he said, well, if we have the president from Pageland High School, then the vice president will be from Petersburg. Mm-hmm. And so he did that. And he was criticized for the way that he handled things, but he was just a fair person.
Yeah.
And I've never had another principal just as great as he was to me. Wow. Because they accepted me on that staff, and I did well. And at one point, I had the students to write an essay, Miss McKinstry, then and now, when I first started, because some of them were kind of afraid to come into my room that day, at the beginning of school, and they were looking at the names to see who went where, and some of them were kind of afraid to come in my room, some of the white students. And they wrote an essay. I had them to write an essay, Miss McKinstry, then and now, because I knew they had some reservations about me, and I knew that they figured I had some reservations about them. But it wasn't hard for me, because I had been around white people. basically all of my life. Mm-hmm. You know, I had worked for Miss Phillips. I had learned a lot from her, you know, in just doing practical things around the house, setting tables and just doing mm-hmm. things, you know. And so that I didn't have any fear as such in my teaching. And I know that when I was trained at Johnson C. Smith, they didn't tell me that they were training me to teach black children or white children. They said they were training me to teach children.
Yeah.
And that made a difference
yeah.
in the way I saw things. Mm-hmm. So it was so amazing how some of the students said that they thought that I would cater to the blacks and kind of ignore them or not be as fair. And they and one girl, Phyllis Funderburk, wrote, she said, I thought that you would be prejudiced and cater to the blacks, she said, but as I grew to know you, she said, I grew to respect you and love you, she said, because you treated all of us the same. If I did something wrong, you addressed that. Mm-hmm. If a black student did something wrong, you addressed that. Mm-hmm. And so you didn't show any favoritism. And that was one of the greatest compliments that I could have received from a student. Mm-hmm. And when I went back over to Paisland a few years ago, one of the students that I had taught, one of the white students, Joey Mangum, had become football coach at the new Paisland High School. They had built a new school. And he found out that that one of the teachers over there knew me. She was from Winsboro. And he told her one day, he said, if Ms. McKinstry comes to Paisland, you bring her to see me. And when she brought me down to the school and I saw Joey just grabbed me and just hugged me. And I had to say, Joey, don't squeeze me to death, you know, because I said, let me breathe.
Yeah.
But he was so happy to see me. Oh. And he was one of the students that I had taught at Paisland the year they integrated.
Oh. Wow.
And so he just thanked me. And then the first class that graduated from Paisland High School invited me back to their 46th class reunion in 2015.
Wow.
And I can remember that so vividly. It was because it was the same year that I had gone back to Johnson C. Smith University in Charlotte, North Carolina, where I had graduated from. Mm-hmm. And we celebrated 50 years of being out of college. And we marched wow. behind the class of 2015. And that morning at commencement, they gave out 260 degrees. And then with our class, we marched in our gold caps and gown.
Oh my goodness. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Wow. Can you talk a little bit about your college years?
Well, I tell you, I had fun my college year. I was on work study.
Okay.
So yep. I worked every semester from the time I got to college until the last semester of my senior year, I did not work. Mm. But we had a work-study program, and I did taking up the laundry in the dormitory and tagging that and sending it to, and then distributing them when it came back, and I did that. And sometimes I would be on the front desk answering the telephone, and if somebody had visitors, one of the ladies in the dorm, I would announce that, you know, tell them that they had a visitor downstairs and whatever. So I worked at the desk. And it was a fun thing because I got to meet a lot of people, mm-hmm. especially the guys when they would come to pick up yeah. the girlfriends and stuff like that. But it was just important for me to work because that helped with my tuition. And unlike now, when the students work, they get a check themselves. You know, they just
right.
get directed to them. But I had to have that money to go on my tuition. And if I had anything left over at the end of the school year, then they would give me that money. But I never had anything left over. Everything went to help. And I thought that that was a way that I could help my father because he was still working at Phillips Grandin at the time. And he was, you know, it was a sacrifice for him and my mom to put me through school. And that's why I can appreciate what they did for us, because they made many sacrifices to take care of us. And, you know, I just don't see how parents can neglect their children or don't have their best interest in mind when they do. And my dad, I knew he had to struggle because there were times when he had to borrow money on money that he had not even made yet to help pay my tuition. And I just appreciate what he did for me.
And was your college a black college, or
it was basically black, but we had a few white students, and we had a few students from other countries. We had a
really neat.
Yeah, we had some children. I mean, some students from parts of Africa, and we had a couple of students that was from the United States. They were just from our different states, and they had integrated this college, but predominantly black. And at one time it was a Presbyterian college. It was supported by the Presbyterian Church, but now it's different now because they have gotten a lot of grants, like from the Duke Endowment and stuff like that. And so they have gotten a lot of grants. And in fact, one of my friends at the college, who graduated a year before me, was the first lady president that we had at the college.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, Dorothy Kowser Yancey. And she served as president, I think, for about 14 years.
That's impressive.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so in fact, I think she has been the only black, has been the only female president. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Hmm. Mm-hmm. Good for her.
Yeah.
Girl power.
Yeah. Yeah. And even Johnson C. Smith University, the two presidents, Mr. McCrory and Mr. Hardy Liston, I think his name was Hardy Liston, were from Fairfield County.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And so
that's
they
really neat.
Yeah. So we've had some great people from Fairfield County.
So how did you choose the college that you chose?
Well, actually, one of our family's children, two of her, Miss Banks' children, Susie and Caesar Banks, had two children that attended Johnson C. Smith. One was the oldest daughter, Willie Mae Banks, and then her youngest son, Daniel Banks, attended Johnson C. Smith. So I learned about Johnson C. Smith that way from them attending. And then my sister, who is 2 years older than I am, attended Johnson C. Smith, but she did not finish. She fell in love and she got married. Mm-hmm. She dropped out and she got married, but she attended Johnson C. Smith. But I learned about Johnson C. Smith through my friends, the Banks family.
Wow, and then you got your teaching degree.
Yes.
There. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And then that shaped the rest of your life.
That's right.
Yeah.
And then I did graduate work at the University of South Carolina.
Oh, neat.
I got my master's degree from the University of South Carolina.
Cool.
I think in 1974.
Nice. Mm-hmm. And then, so did you go through the College of Education?
No, I just went through, I was focused on the reading part of it. And I think a Dr. Breedlove was there at the time. And but I didn't go through the college of education.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I guess you got to see so much because you had your experience growing up in the black school.
Yes.
And then while you were working as a teacher, mm-hmm. you experienced integration.
That's right. That was 3 years after I had worked in an all-black school.
Right, yes,
and
yeah. Yes,
and then, and so when I came back to Winnsboro, I was working out of the district office with the school district, but I was in the reading, I was doing reading, and so I was working with the, I guess the middle age group, 6th through 8th, I believe. And anyway, my director of reading at the time told me, you know, that she said, this year is going to be different for you because you're going to be working with white students as well as black. And so, I, you know, she just did her little spiel and everything. And I told him, I said, well, I'm not worried about that, I said, because when I went to Johnson C. Smith, they didn't tell me I was going to be working with black students or white students. They just said children. And so I said, that's what I'm prepared to do. I said, but anyway, I said, I worked in a integrated setting last year because they integrated Pageland the year before they integrated Fairfield County.
Okay.
Yeah. So that was...
So you did it twice.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then, I mean, you continued your career.
Yes.
And now here we are today.
Yes.
And would you say that we've come a long way?
I think we have come a long way to some degree. We've come a long way, and we have access to the public libraries and stuff like that. I mean, the race relation could be better, but, you know, you're going to have situations, and I don't care where you are and who you're dealing with, because even in our own race, you know, there's sometimes division. So, but I think that as a whole, we've come a long way, and we have more opportunities than we did when we had a segregated situation. But man, now, mind you, I feel like most of the teachers that I have worked with, who, as a student, when I was coming through school, they had us in mind. They had our best interests in mind. They knew the community. They knew the parents. And if they didn't know your parent, they knew somebody else that did know your parent. And they made a concerted effort to contact your parents if you were doing something that you shouldn't have been doing, or if you needed some help in certain areas. Because I remember we had a lot of experiences, like in our situation, we didn't have a lot of different activities. But at the school, we had May Day activities where the classes participated. We had competition, and we had an opportunity to get on stage because each class had to present a play or something, you know, during that month, you know, in the assembly. You know, so you got exposed to public speaking and things like that. You got some, you know, some different things that maybe you wouldn't have otherwise gotten. But they made opportunities available for us as best they could. And most of the teachers that I can recall lived in the community. Mm-hmm. They were right here in the community. So, and some of them you might have gone to church with, or you might have known which church they attended and all that stuff. So it was just a kind of a big family affair in a sense.
Yeah.
And then those who didn't have their own homes, there were other teachers that had houses big enough that they could rent rooms out to them. So that for the most part, they were here in Winsboro basically all the time.
And so as things have changed, hopefully we'll continue changing and growing, and race relations will improve more.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. What are some key things that you might want to see in the future?
Now, right now, I'm just kind of thinking, but I'd like to see... you know, people just get along in general, you know, better, and respecting each other. And I would like to see a time when people could even worship together as a whole, because people always speak of the 11 o'clock hour on Sunday as being one of the most segregated times that we have. And then there are, you know, some... pastors and church members that will welcome you into their church, you know, and then there are others that still have that kind of a little, you know, stigma. There's a little stigma. And so I would like to see that. I'd like to see more recreational areas where people could get some cultural things, you know, going on and be in attendance on a regular basis. And it would, you know, would just be something that anybody could attend, anybody's family. You know, it didn't matter what your status was as far as, you know, whether you were rich or whether you were kind of poor or whatever. You know, it wouldn't matter that much. And I would just love to see people just get along.
Yeah, me
my,
too.
My sister has always said that I have been the peacemaker in the family. But I just believe in God. I believe in the dignity of humankind. And I feel like everybody needs to be treated with respect.
Yeah. I agree. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you, Jesse. Okay. This has been absolutely lovely getting to talk with you.
Well, thank you.
And I will let you know when the transcription and everything is available. And okay. We'll make sure that you get the link to be able to go online.
Okay.
And then we'll wrap up here. I just have a couple of other wrap-up things to do before I let you go.
Okay.
But yes, thank you again.
Okay.